This is special coverage from NPR News in Washington. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel in New York. Of the four planes that were hijacked today, one did not reach its target. United Airlines Flight 93 from Newark to San Francisco crashed in Pennsylvania. There were 45 people on board when the jet slammed into a grassy field. NPR's Ken Barkas is just outside Shanksville, Pennsylvania, in the south-central part of the state. It's about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. And, Ken, this is the flight from which there have been stories, at least, that passengers were making calls on their cell phones describing what was happening in the flight. Is that correct?
That's what we hear. We've heard that there was one passenger for sure who was in a bathroom, apparently, who was calling 911 and saying that the plane was being hijacked. The 911 dispatcher listened as long as he could and then heard an explosion, and that was the last thing they heard. What's remarkable about the site, Robert, is how remote this is. On the way here, I've seen many Amish or Mennonite out in their field. This is really a very remote area. Where it actually crashed looks like it's a reclaimed strip mine. It's a large field, as you mentioned, about 80 miles east of Pittsburgh. And really, there are hundreds and hundreds of federal officials here. It's almost an alphabet soup of agencies, the ATF, FBI, NTSB. Most surprisingly, some of the first people here were actually postal inspectors. No one is being turned away who can help out here. There are even road crews from Pennsylvania that are helping at the site right now.
But helping at the site at this point, I assume, it doesn't mean that people hold out any hope of rescuing passengers or crew, do they?
Well, I think that's right. There are, this is a 3 to 5 mile area of a crime scene, a huge crime scene. One person who went actually into the woods where pieces of the plane seemed to be scattered came out and saying that there was no piece larger than a phone book, that he didn't see any bodies at all. He didn't see any pieces of the plane that were larger than a phone book. Someone else said they thought that, an ATF official said, the plane literally broke up into thousands of pieces.
Does it seem from what people describe that the plane was still flying west, that is, as it would have been from Newark to San Francisco when it went down?
I think so. There was a guy I talked to who was running a bulldozer who said it came down about, he said if it had come down 50 feet sooner, he wouldn't be here right now. It came down very fast. The people around here, even in a town 2-3 miles away, felt the shaking and vibrations before they heard an explosion. I'm seeing them now bringing in cadaver sniffing dogs. They're also bringing in dozens of these huge diesel-powered lights, assuming that they're going to be into the investigation well into the night here.
Thank you, Ken. NPR's Ken Barkas speaking to us from Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh.
One of the hijacked flights in the attack this morning was American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 767 flying from Boston to Los Angeles. The plane was carrying 81 passengers, 9 flight attendants, and 2 pilots. NPR's Mandalit Del Barco is in Los Angeles. Mandalit, what is going on there at the airport? Have they been treating this the way they generally treat a crash, summoning families to the airport?
Yes, as you know, the Los Angeles airport is closed. It was evacuated this morning, and officials from the airport and the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, are talking to reporters. We're expecting another briefing in a few minutes, but they said that they were working with the FBI and the Los Angeles police. People who, this morning at the airport, I went there before it was closed, and people who were waiting to get on flights were turned away and are now stranded. Some of the relatives of the passengers on those planes were whisked away to places where they hopefully were going to get some counseling, possibly to deal with, although there's no list, definitive list of who the passengers were yet. The airlines have not released those complete lists yet, but they are waiting to find out more about their relatives, and details are still a little sketchy. I know that I can tell you that in Los Angeles, a number of events have been canceled. They might seem a little bit minor right now, but the Latin Grammys, a big concert by Madonna, was canceled. The U.S.-Mexico border is on alert, and people are just stunned. Theme parks are closed. Disneyland is closed. Hollywood movie studios are shut down. Right now, people are just kind of anxious to find out more details because, as you know, a number of those those flights were on their way to Los Angeles. 3 of the flights that were involved today in the incidents were
on their way to L.A. Mandalit, with LAX closed today, as airports were across the country, any sense of when those airports will reopen very quickly?
Well, we might know in a few minutes. They're going to be giving another briefing today. But it looks like they're going to be closed indefinitely. I know that the state buildings, government buildings are closed, and they're, the government just announced that they might open again tomorrow.
Thanks very much. NPR's Mandalit Del Barco reporting from Los Angeles.
NPR's Jackie Northam is in Chicago, where the Sears Tower was evacuated this morning and state government buildings were shut down. Jackie, what's been the response there in downtown Chicago?
Well, it's very, very quiet. It's almost eerily quiet in downtown Chicago right now. The lights are off and the doors are locked in most buildings in the Loop, including the major department stores. And as you said, the Sears Tower, other major buildings like the Hancock Center. The city officials began closing the buildings and evacuating them after it became clear that it wasn't just an isolated attack on the World Trade Center. The Pentagon had also been hit, and there was a fear that Chicago could also be a target. So they felt it was just better to play it safe and evacuate people.
What other precautions have been taken there?
Well, they've closed some schools. They've closed a lot of the shopping malls in the suburbs. They've closed all the federal buildings. Again, all the shops downtown. There's a real fear here because it's a major American city with several landmarks like the Sears Tower. And the fear is what's stopping the same kind of attack from happening here.
So there is apprehension, but the attacks took place in New York and Washington, not yet in Chicago. Still, people are concerned.
Yeah, they certainly are. The few people that I talked to who are remaining downtown today, that was their main fear. And the other one, of course, was disbelief at just the extent of this attack.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
NPR's Jackie Northam in Chicago.
In Florida today, reaction to today's terrorist attack included the closing of Walt Disney World and the suspension of the space shuttle operations. NPR's Philip Davis is in Miami. What are people in Florida saying today, Philip?
Well, as you know, the president was in Florida when the attacks occurred. He was attending an education event in the Sarasota area. He was reading to school children at the time, and that's when he made his first remarks about the statement of regret and that the U.S. would try to hunt down the perpetrators of this incident before he left. Meanwhile, the rest of Florida is just in a state of shock and an elevated state of alert. The U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command headquarters is here in Miami, and a spokesman told me that the facility is heightening its security measures and is restricting entrance into the facility and has posted more guards and has taken other precautions that he preferred not to talk about. Meanwhile, in the civilian government, the president's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, declared a state of emergency in Florida. Bush says it's just mainly a preemptive action, but he ordered the state house evacuated anyway, and state flags are flying at half-mast. But the governor says he expects the state government to be open for business tomorrow.
All right.
As you mentioned.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
NPR's Philip Davis reporting from Miami.
Mark Sedaklik of Minnesota Public Radio is in Minneapolis, where he joins us now. The airport there is closed, as is the Mall of America in suburban Bloomington. What's been the response there in the Twin Cities, Mark?
No, very much like it's been in other parts of the country. People are saddened, they're shocked, they're uneasy about what's going to happen next. As you note, some of the landmark buildings in this area are closed. We have a World Trade Center building in downtown St. Paul that was evacuated. And the tallest building in Minnesota, the IDS building in downtown Minneapolis, was also evacuated. Many of the workers were not forced out of their offices, left on their own accord to go home so they could be with their families. Most public schools in Minnesota remained open during the day. Many of them had heightened security. Some after-school activities and events were canceled. It's a big story here. Obviously, New York and Washington, D.C. don't seem very far away to people here today.
And any word on when these buildings might reopen?
No, we don't know exactly what's happening here. You know, the news keeps changing in terms of what's going to be open, what's going to be closed, when the airport's going to open, this sort of thing. The governor has activated a state emergency center. We have a special hotline established for people to report any specific, suspicious activity. The National Guard's on heightened alert in Minnesota, and security at state buildings has been increased. A lot of different precautionary measures in place. The officials here are urging the citizenry to be calm, and one gets a sense that a lot of the actions they're taking are intended simply to reassure a very shaken public that there will be order.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
Mark Zedeklik of Minnesota Public Radio speaking with us from Minneapolis.
Shortly after this morning's attacks, an Arab satellite television station reported that a radical Palestinian group, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, had claimed responsibility for them. But DFLP spokesman quickly denied any involvement, as did the leader of the Islamist group, Hamas. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat condemned the bombings as shocking and unbelievable, and he offered condolences. But as NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports from Jerusalem, many Palestinians celebrated today's tragedies.
From Palestinian refugee camps in southern Lebanon to several cities of the West Bank, spontaneous rallies erupted as the extent of the attacks became known. Some 3,000 people marched in Nablus, clapping hands and waving Palestinian flags as gunmen fired into the air. In East Jerusalem, outside the walls of the Old City, a couple dozen celebrants handed out sweets to passers-by, a ritual gesture of festivity. A few drivers honked their horns in approval and flashed V for victory signs. Israeli police quickly dispersed the gathering, but shopkeepers lining the route were happy to explain their reaction. Money changer Nasser Kord, like many, felt certain the attacks were committed to further the cause of the Palestinians and to protest the U.S.'s unconditional support of Israel.
They accept whatever Israel does. So maybe they will think back now, they will think again. It's not good to be, you have to be straight with everybody. We are children, we are people, we want to live. Why should you support Israel regarding if it is right or wrong? They support Israel.
Over and over, Palestinians here denounced President Bush's unwillingness to intervene in the year-long Arab-Israeli conflict and his tacit support of Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. Another money changer who wouldn't give his name blamed Bush for Sharon's escalating use of force in the occupied territories.
He gave Sharon the green light to kill everybody. He don't care. He don't care for anybody.
I don't support these attacks on innocent human beings, he said, but let Americans now feel our suffering. Nasser Kord said, Bush has a policy of war. This is what Bush wanted. This is what he gets. Israelis reacted to the attacks with shock and tightened security. Authorities announced that Tel Aviv's international airport would be closed to foreign airliners for at least 24 hours. Israeli diplomatic staff in the U.S. and several other locations were also stripped down to essential employees. One foreign ministry official said, no one really understands this, who's behind it or what their aim is. We're waiting for it to become more clear. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Jerusalem.
We'll be back in a moment with more coverage of today's attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. This is NPR.
This is a special report from NPR News on today's terrorist acts. I'm Robert Siegel in New York.
And in Washington, I'm Linda Wertheimer. Today's attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were remarkably well-coordinated. John Baracchini runs the Washington office of the Monterey Institute of International Studies. Mr. Baracchini,
yo, guys, no advance.
Mr. Baracchini, you've studied terrorist motivations and behavioral patterns. Does what we have seen today fit into some kind of pattern?
It fits to a certain degree. What we see today is unprecedented in many ways. But based on other attacks, mass casualty attacks, that seem incomprehensible by most of us, there is the pattern, if indeed the perpetrators are who we seem to believe they are, that is, people affiliated with Osama bin Laden, if those are the perpetrators, or somebody affiliated with the previous World Trade Center bombers, they have articulated their motivations as being revenge, retribution, wanting to demonstrate to Americans that there's a penalty for supporting Israel, and a range of psychological motivations, such as affirming that they are superior and that they hold the lives of thousands of people in their hands.
You wrote a report on the last attempt on the World Trade Center, attempt to bomb the World Trade Center. Why is that a choice? Why is that such a potent symbol for people to attack?
It's an excellent question, because today it seems as though the symbol of our financial power, the World Trade Center, and the symbol of our military power, the Pentagon, were the targets of attack. But in 1993, I think it was more complicated. Certainly the World Trade towers are an important symbol. But they also were directly in the line of sight across from the storage shed where the World Trade Center bombers were building their bomb. So they saw them every day. And moreover, one of the perpetrators of the World Trade Center bombing in 93 worked in a car company whose business was right opposite the World Trade Center. So many of his hires, people that he picked up, he got them right there at the World Trade Center. Finally, an important part is that at that time, the World Trade Center was one of the few buildings in the area with an underground garage.
But you're describing sort of informal reasons why people would choose the world, because convenience would be one of the reasons to choose it. These attacks today seem extraordinary. They seem sophisticated, involving people who are capable of piloting airliners, something that completely seems to have escaped the notice of those people who are trying to prevent these kinds of attacks and jump in before they happen. I think most Americans are just stunned by the possibility that such a thing could happen at all.
No question. This is off scale and unprecedented. There was a report, a White House Commission on Aviation Security and Safety in 1997, which followed the downing or the crash of TWA 800. The question in my mind today is, what measures have we implemented from that report? What did that report look at that might have prevented what happened today? It's been quite some time since we've had a hijacking in this country. So there clearly, this is breaking new ground. But there are events that require or that should be looked at in the past. There is the concern that the Air Egypt crash off of the East Coast may have been a suicide crash. There was a case in 1994 where some people from the armed Islamic group of Algeria hijacked a plane and had it fly over Paris and threatened to have it crash, or had it fly towards Paris and threatened to have it crash.
So there have been some indications that something like this might have been in the cards. You, in your study of the World Trade Center, you indicated that it was built to withstand an airplane crashing into it.
Well, it was built to withstand a crash of a 707, which is a much smaller plane than those planes that are believed to have crashed into it today. Of course, that could never be tested. Today it was tested with a plane of a whole other size and magnitude, and the tragic results we see.
Mr. Parrachini, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
John Parrachini runs the Washington office of the Monterey Institute of International Studies.
After this morning's explosions at the World Trade Center, most buildings in Manhattan emptied out, and the people who work in them attempted the long trek home. But the reverse was true for Manhattan hospitals, like Bellevue, just a few miles uptown from the blasts and the city's main trauma center. Nurses and doctors, scheduled or not scheduled, arrived at the hospital to work. And by 11:30 this morning, a couple of dozen New Yorkers were lined up at the entrance to Bellevue. They wanted to volunteer.
I'm a minister. I wanted to know if there's anything that I can do. If anyone needs to be, if they need me to talk to them.
You're a minister?
Yes.
Medical students turned up. A dentist presented himself to offer whatever help he might be able to provide. But the main assistance Bellevue needed was blood.
O positive, O negative, AAB, front of line, please.
Inside the rotunda of the hospital, the volunteers filled out forms, waited for their names to be called, and then got in line for their blood to be taken. Among them, James Stevenson and George Schneff, two men both of whom had been downtown in the financial district when the blasts occurred.
So I was working on 25th Street on Brew College. I'm a construction worker, and I saw the explosion. You know, we went up to the roof and saw. I came here because I'm a registered nurse, but I came here to volunteer. And they, you know, right now they're not calling for volunteers, so I figured I'd give blood.
So you're giving blood?
Right.
I was down there when I saw the both planes hit. I was on Fulton Street by the Millennium Hotel. I was on my way into number 6. Another few minutes and I would have been in the debris. We all ran into the hotel garage. Then we stood outside in shock. And then I saw the bodies coming out of the building. I said, this is horrible. And then the second one hit. I came up here and I heard the appeal for blood. It's a horrible thing down there. I mean,
you saw the bodies falling out of the
building?
There
were people who on the 90th floor, it was either burned to death or jump out of the building. They were jumping out of the building. Must have seen about 20 of them. It was people on the ground were in shock.
At a quarter past 12 outside Manhattan's Bellevue Hospital, there is a line of hundreds of New Yorkers
filling out forms so that they can give blood inside. Just a half an hour ago, there were barely a dozen people here, and now the line stretches out through the grounds of Bellevue, out to First Avenue.
Here is a review of the story we're reporting today. The headquarters of the U.S. military came under direct terrorist attack this morning. A commercial jetliner was hijacked and crashed into the side of the Pentagon. American forces around the globe were put on highest alert. The White House and the Capitol building were evacuated. Also attacked this morning, the World Trade Center in New York City. Both skyscrapers, 110 stories tall, burned and then collapsed onto the street below after two jets smashed into the towers. A third building in the complex collapsed later this afternoon. Police are estimating that thousands of people were hurt or killed in New York alone. A fourth plane was hijacked this morning. It crashed in a field 80 miles outside of Pittsburgh. Before it went down, a passenger in that plane called 911 from his cell phone to try to get help. We'll be following this story throughout the rest of the day and tonight. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
This is special coverage from NPR News of today's terrorist attacks. I'm Robert Siegel in New York.
And in Washington, D.C., I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams.
Senator, we heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out, and we saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere, and people are jumping out the windows. Over there, they're jumping out the windows.
There was a major fire at the Pentagon. Of the full six-story height of the Pentagon is gone. The notch is about...
The building is falling right now. People are running through the street. Smoke is everywhere.
The United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts.
Today, September 11, 2001, the United States became the target of the worst terrorist attack in history.
These were parallel attacks on the most potent symbols of American financial and military power. At 8:45 this morning, an American Airlines plane hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York. About 20 minutes later, a second plane flew straight into the South Tower. Less than an hour after that, both buildings had fallen.
About an hour after the first strike in New York, a plane crashed into the Pentagon, collapsing one side of the building. Another plane crashed into a field near Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. The White House was evacuated. The president, who was in Florida, was rushed to a secure location.
Hundreds of people were aboard the four planes that crashed. No one knows exactly how many people were in the World Trade Center when it was destroyed. The death toll could be in the thousands.
At 8:45 this morning, New Yorkers were arriving at work, picking up a bagel or a cup of coffee on the way when today's first wave of calamitous news was announced. Newscasters reached for precedent. 60 years ago, a plane had crashed into the Empire State Building. People watched on television and also through the windows of their apartments and office buildings that faced downtown, and they saw the event repeat itself at the second tower. It became clear that there was no precedent for what was happening today. It will no doubt be days before all the black boxes are retrieved and all the dead and injured are accounted for, and it will certainly be a lot longer than that before the people who were in downtown Manhattan this morning ever forget the experience. NPR's Melissa Block has been near the World Center today, World Trade Center today, and she's here with me now. Melissa, of course, the target was symbolic in some respects, but just for the sheer density of people who would be in one spot, you couldn't find more people packed in a small area than around the World Trade Center.
Absolutely, both for those killed and for those who were able to witness what happened, people walking to work over the Brooklyn Bridge. I talked with a construction worker named Murray Goff, who was at a construction site just north of the Twin Towers, and he described he had flown in last night from West Virginia, where he lives. He was working on this site when he heard the first jet screaming low overhead the work site.
And we heard it go over, and we looked up, and then we heard the crash. Run out here and look and seen the plane where it went into the side. We're standing here, can't believe it. Whenever the second plane crashed through the smoke into the other one, well, as soon as I seen that plane hit, I said, it's a terrorist attack. They better call Red Alert, all for federal buildings. I mean, that's the only thing it could be, because it came in right above us and just banked and went into the building.
It came in right over your head?
Yeah, right over here, just right over like that and just banked. You can see it was an American airline. I didn't see the American airline, but some of the workers looked up and seen the plane and it was an American Airlines.
And then police and emergency workers were rushed downtown.
That's right. So they're all drawn to the scene. These planes have gone into the buildings. They go in to try to evacuate personnel. And later I saw just dozens of police cars that were driving around covered with debris, their windows caved in from the explosion. These were still the operating vehicles that they were using. I spoke with a Lieutenant Thomas Inez, who's with the Port Authority Police. He responded to the scene. He was there trying to rescue people. He saw people jumping off the highest floors of the Twin Towers after the planes crashed, and then he was there when the buildings came down.
I guess the scariest part was being covered in dust and not being able to see, and breathing through my hat. It was pitch black.
And you were breathing through your police hat?
My hat, yes, because that's all I had with me.
The people who were jumping, did you see them fall?
Unfortunately, yes. It's not something I would like to talk about, and unfortunately, it's not something I'll ever be able to forget about. At first, you thought it was pieces of the building falling until you realized that they had arms and legs. And at this point, I really wouldn't want to say anything more about it.
He was off to give blood, I gather, later in the day.
I don't know about him, but I did speak with the parent of a young child who was picking him up from school. You saw a lot of parents rushing to schools to pick up their children. Michael Ruddy stopped to talk to me. His wife worked in the Trade Center until a year ago.
What did you tell your son?
Excuse me. I'm very emotional about this. I explained to him that something very terrible had happened, that the World Trade Center, which he knows very well, because he used to call it Mama's Building. I told him that it had been hit by an airplane and had now been destroyed, and it doesn't exist anymore. He's, I think, concerned because he sees how sad I am. He kind of sees the sadness. Sadness in me, and I think he's a little concerned about that. I asked a policeman outside school, what can I do? I want to do something. I want to help. And he said, give blood. So I'm going to go over to maybe St. Vincent's and see if I could do anything.
And indeed, there were many people going to many hospitals in Manhattan offering to give blood. Melissa, you live here, you cover this city, you've seen all kinds of things in New York. How would you describe the way New Yorkers coped with this today?
Clearly no one's seen anything like it, and it was a mix of things. You did see a lot of people who were drawn down as spectators, people with cameras. There was the little moment of a Salvation Army team that was setting out trays of milk and cookies, but at the same time, horror on the faces of New Yorkers as they clustered around radios, cars had their radios cranked, people just devastated by what had happened here today.
Thank you. NPR's Melissa Block.
Here in Washington, less than an hour after the second plane crashed into the World Trade Center, a third aircraft sliced into the Pentagon. Dozens of injured people were shipped to area hospitals. Many of the seats of power in the Capitol, the White House, the Capitol, the Treasury and State Departments, were evacuated. And 2 hours later, United Airlines confirmed a fourth plane crash near Pittsburgh with no reports of survivors among the 45 on board. NPR's Peter Kenyon joins us now. Let's go back to the morning crash at the Pentagon, Peter.
Well, law enforcement's NOAA officials say it was American Airlines Flight 77 en route from Dulles Airport in Virginia to Los Angeles that suddenly veered off course and smashed into the Pentagon. It ripped open a hole in the side of three of the five rings that you can see above ground on the Pentagon. Military officials said the fire was intense, the heat was blistering. At least 40 victims reported in local hospitals, seven in critical conditions at a burn facility. Hard to get to the site because of the smoke and the fire. One victim from the plane has already been identified now. Barbara Olson, the wife of U.S. Solicitor General Theodore Olson, was aboard that flight. Law enforcement officials told the Associated Press Mrs. Olson called her husband from the plane and described the hijacking, saying that the hijackers were using knife-like instruments. Theodore Olson also confirmed that his wife was on board, saying he wished it wasn't so.
Now, to be clear about this, we had two planes hijacked that crashed into the Twin Towers in New York, and this would have been a hijacked aircraft also.
That's right. This one took off from Dulles Airport outside of Washington en route to Los Angeles and just immediately veered off and hit the Pentagon.
Especially shocking, this sort of attack on the Pentagon, the center of the military, and an attack really on the nation's capital.
It really was, Noah, and the rapid evacuation and the confusion around the city today was very telling. Tourists were being yelled at by agitated Secret Service agents, and It's kind of recognizing that confusion and how bad that might seem. The House and Senate leaders quickly gathered to say, we're going to reopen the Capitol as soon as possible. President Bush, who had been traveling in Louisiana and Nebraska, decided to come back to Washington, where he's expected to address the nation tonight. And the military remains on high alert status. Military vehicles have been seen on the streets of Washington, D.C. We're not expecting a lot of details from President Bush on how the government will respond to this attack, but clearly there are expectations of something significant. I might mention in Israel today, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon called it a turning point in the war against international terror.
Let's add a bit here about the fourth hijacked plane of the day. It crashed outside Pittsburgh.
Virginia Congressman James Moran, he's a Democrat whose district includes the Pentagon, he was briefed by military officials today, and after the briefing he said that he thought that that target was Camp David. The crash actually occurred about 85 miles northwest of Camp David, but there were, as you mentioned, 45 people on board, no expected survivors, and that crashed in a remote field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Peter. NPR's Peter Kenyon.